session number 30304.
Said Reina Reel 4.
Well, here we are inside the cockpit of a Tiger Moth, and we want a taxi. So, what are we going to do to control the aircraft when it starts to move as we increase the throttle to give more power from the engine, the propeller? Obviously, we don't want to bring the tail up, because there is a tail skid at the back of the aircraft, and of course with the two wheels you have what is known as a three-point settle, or if you're coming in to land, a three-point landing, if you're fortunate enough to land with all three on the ground at the same time. So the problem is, well, not the problem, but what are we going to do to keep the tail down as we taxi? Because it will naturally want to come up. The aircraft is built to fly parallel to the ground. At the moment, it's not. It's on the ground at an angle, sloping backwards. So we want to bring it to a position nearer being parallel with the ground, but not too much, so we've got to control it. We do this by using the elevators at the back of the aircraft, the hinged part of the tailplane. If we pull the stick back, then the elevator, or elevators, there's one on each side of the rudder, they are linked. The elevators come up. They have an upward angle to them so that the airflow meets the surface of the elevator, and the force pushes or helps to push the tail down. If we push the stick forward, then the elevator drops at an angle, or lowers, it certainly doesn't drop off, lowers at an angle, so that that increases the cord of the tailplane, and the cord of a wing has a great deal to do with the amount of lift that it can provide. So if we push the stick forward, we're going to virtually tip up the aircraft if we're taxiing, because the tailplane has been given too much lift. So whilst taxiing, the first thing to remember then is obviously pull the stick right back so that the tailplane has enough pressure on the upward pointing surface to keep it down on the ground. The other thing which would tend to move it from this trailing along the ground, I say trailing because it's a trailing hook which is running along the ground as we move forward. And the other thing is the amount of forward force that the engine and the propellers are providing. So we have to control the speed as well as keeping the tail down by judicious use of the throttle, which is on the side of the aircraft on our left. And if we feel that the speed is increasing too much, that will tend to bring the tail up, in spite of the fact that you've got the control column fully back. So you have to reduce the you've got to slide back. In other words, the power control, the engine control on your left. But of course, you may want or will certainly have to turn. So how do we manage to turn the aircraft? That's the purpose of the rudder, which you see at the back of the aircraft. with part of the tailplane on one side and the other part of the tailplane on the other side. And of course, we've just mentioned the elevators at the back. If you want to turn to the left, you use the left rudder pedal, and the rudder consists of two parts. The fin, which doesn't move, it's stationary, static on the frame of the aircraft, and the movable part, which is the rudder. If you're wanting to turn to the left, you would apply left rudder, that is, press on the rudder pedal with your left foot. And conversely, if you want to turn to the right, you would use the right rudder pedal. It's more than likely that when you're taxiing, you have the purpose in mind of getting to a suitable position for takeoff. So there will be a point convenient for this ahead of you, and you need to notice fairly soon where you're going to have to alter the settings of the controls that you're using. Otherwise, the aircraft would continue on its present earthbound course, and you want to get up into the air. So at some point, we've got to stop. And bearing in mind the type of surface over which we are taxiing, you know, we start to reduce the throttle setting, which will deny the aircraft of the appropriate power and gradually come to a stop. If we're about to take off, this is where we start the takeoff check of all the instruments and the surfaces of the aircraft. And that, of course, takeoff is a separate item. So that brings to an end our little jaunt of taxiing.
When you were taxiing the Tiger Moth, what's the visibility like in the aircraft? Is it good, or are there blind spots?
Adequate. It depends really on the size of the pilot, quite frankly. I say adequate. I've never found it anything else on a Tiger Moth because, I know of one or two instructors. In fact, the first one, the chap who took me up first to hang me over the Manchester Ship Canal, was quite small, and he could hardly see above the level of the cockpit edge. But obviously he knew what he was doing, and his head did seem to grow a little larger every so often when he needed it to. But I never had any problems in that respect.
Okay, you described the taxiing effort. What would be the next kind of stage for you to learn in this? Would it be taking off, or would you go? Would you be airborne and then learn certain manoeuvres in the sequence of instructions?
Well, on the assumption that we'd spent quite a bit of time in the aircraft, just moving it under power on the ground, as an approach to taxiing, then yes, we're in a, from what I described at the stop position, we would be in a suitable position for takeoff. Other things considered, of course, that we have enough room ahead without any obstructions to reach flying speed. Excuse me. Flying speed being the speed at which the aircraft can become airborne. So, we're taking off. We first of all make sure that we're not impeding any other aircraft by having a good look around, and then make the pre-takeoff check of the instruments, which I briefly described a minute or two ago. And when we're happy, I must point out before we do this that we have already tested the engine before we left the dispersal point where the aircraft are kept, because obviously it would be unwise to take off without doing that, and it was an omission that I should have remembered before I described the taxiing part, because particularly with the Tiger Moth, excuse me, without brakes, you have to do the testing of the engine against chocks under the wheels, and incidentally, we forgot the starting procedure to get the engines going.
Well, should we do the starting procedure? I think that's...
Yes.
If you can do the starting procedure, how do you get the engines...
Well, let's just say that... well, here we are ready for takeoff. But in the meantime, this is how we got the engine started at the beginning of this particular passage. Well, in dispersal, and a dispersal is a place where aircraft are put out for use from the hangars or wherever they may be kept, we would be going out to the aircraft ready with our equipment, parachute, etc., suitably clothed, and with a ground mechanic in order to help us start the engine, because there's no self-starter on a Tiger Moth aircraft. At least there wasn't in my day. So somehow we've got to get the propeller going, because it's the propeller that provides the airflow which is going to flow over the wings, down the aircraft, over the tailplane, and give us not only lift but also control. And we would need chocks under the wheels. The mechanic would call to the pilot, who would by this time be in the cockpit. Petrol on, switches off, throttle closed, suck in. And the suck in part means that if he turns the propeller now a few times, he is sucking into the cylinders of the engine sufficient petrol for it to be there when he gets the second command, which is petrol on, switches on, throttle closed, contact. And at that point he swings the propeller, and with luck it should start. And with a Tiger Moth, believe me, it nearly always does.
Okay.
Well, we turn into wind so that the wind is going to help us and give us lift, and have a final look around, side to side, ahead, up above,
And if there is a signal person to give you go or stop and make sure that you obey his instructions, or flashes the appropriate green light, and then apply the power and push the stick, the joystick or the control column forward, that will bring the tail up because of the down angle on the elevators, which will increase the chord of the tail plane and give us more lift on the tail plane, which will bring the aircraft parallel with the ground, which we should have reached by the time we're halfway down the probable takeoff run. As we are going down the takeoff run, we are watching the airspeed indicator closely, and when we reach what is known as flying speed, which for the Tiger Moth, I forget the exact figure, but it's probably about 50 mph, we ease back on the control column, keep the wings level by centralizing the column or moving it one way or the other, keep the aircraft flying in a straight line by using the rudders, and having eased back the control column, we are in a climb, which we continue until we reach a height of about 500 feet. And then if we're doing what is known as circuits and bumps, in other words, going round the airfield in order to practice takeoffs and landings, at 500 feet we would make a turn to the left, a 90 degree turn in the sense of on the horizontal, but not the amount of bank, of course, on the aircraft. The actual amount of bank would be perhaps 10 degrees, but we're turning to the left so that we can do the crosswind leg. The wind will now be coming from our starboard, that is the right side, and having still continued the climb, at 1,000 feet we would then turn again to the left and assume cruising speed rather than climbing speed. Cruising speed would be between 80 and 100 miles an hour, if you were lucky in a Tiger Moth. And then on the downwind leg, if we look out onto the port side, we would see the airfield down below, we need to get into a position so that we can make an approach and then a landing. So bearing in mind the strength of the wind, because obviously we now have the wind behind us as we're going down the downwind leg, if the wind is quite strong, we would make a turn to the left, that is at right angles to the intended track to make a landing. We would make an earlier turn, and then if the wind is not so strong, having decided at which point to turn again to the left through a 90 degree turn, we would go fly a crosswind, starting to lose height to about 500 feet, and then make another turn, still in a descending at an angle. I've lost it there. I know what to say. We're going back to describe again the turn at 500 feet. Remember, we've been coming downwind, and we've decided how much beyond the end of the landing ground that we can see down below. We've decided how much we need to proceed past that equivalent point in the air in order that when we turn left and start on the descent, we're now approaching the line that we must take in order to line up with the runway, well, not the grass line. I speak of a runway as though all airfields had them, but of course they hadn't at that time. We make another turn at about 500 feet onto what is called the final approach. From there, we have to judge the angle of descent so that ideally, by throttling back as necessary, or indeed increasing the power if the angle of glide or relative glide is such that we're not going to cross over the boundary at between 30 and 50 feet, then we have to make a necessary adjustment. But assuming we've got it right, we're on the correct glide path, we cross the boundary of the airfield and reduce the power almost so that the air screw is just, or the propeller if you prefer, is just ticking over, and you'll find that she will sink gently, and we decide on the spot where we want to put her down, closing the throttle, holding back on the stick so that the nose comes up, the tail goes down, and we get the correct landing attitude, always during this time having kept the aircraft straight, remembering to make the adjustments necessary for any crosswind or the turbulence in the air, and then we should be holding off, just skimming the grass, and Tiger Moth will more or less land herself once you get her in that position, and you just sink gently down onto the ground and get a few bumps, not necessarily because of a bad landing, but because very few grass surfaces were as good as tennis courts, and then you just keep the aircraft running along straight. But when you can, you almost stop and turn at an angle, a 90 degree turn on the ground, so that you can look to see whether there are other aircraft coming in or taking off.
Can you describe to me, you mentioned while you were doing a flight like that you would make a turn. How do you physically make the turn?
You use both the rudder and the ailerons. The ailerons are that part of the wing between the center section and the tip, outer tip of the wing, which are hinged. And when the flap goes down, then you're increasing the amount of lift and also the amount of drag. The two tend to go together. On both wings, if the control column is central, and if you're making a turn, you want to turn to the left, then you would move the stick. And I shall describe the control column as a stick because it's simpler from now on. You move the stick to the left until you get the angle of the aircraft to the horizon that you want. And you also apply left rudder, which moves the rudder part, obviously, to the left, and the increased airflow on that part of the rudder brings the tail round as well. And because in doing all that you've lost a little lift, Then once you're in the turn, or just before you've completed the turn, you find it necessary to ease the stick back a little, still leaving it in its left orientation, shall we say, because you either have to do that to increase, well, not increase the lift, but bring it back to the level that you had when you were flying straight and level, or increase the power to give you an equivalent amount of lift to keep the aircraft at the height that you wish to be. If, of course, you are making a turn in climbing, as we were on the first two turns, then you would obviously probably have to apply a little more power, but of course you were already in climbing power mode. If you're making the descending turn, as we would be on the last turn before the approach leg, then you would perhaps not need to increase the power at all, depending on the rate of descent that you were aiming for. But you may also reduce the power if you wanted to increase the amount of descent in the turn. In order to come out of the turn, you return quite gently is the best way. You return both controls, the rudder and the stick, and therefore the rear elevators, to the position you had them in other words, normal for level flight.
And keeping the aircraft straight and level, how's that achieved?
Well, in an aircraft which is open, or if you have full visibility, the easiest way, the best way, is to use the horizon. It's normal, it's natural for a pilot to refer to the horizon. But of course you do have a turn and bank indicator, a little needle which swings one way or the other according to tell you whether you're doing it properly or not. You have a little bubble in a tube which indicates the position. If you're going down, the bubble will go down, etc. But these are very basic instruments. I'm trying to remember what was actually in a Tiger Moth. In any aircraft nowadays, of course, you would have an artificial horizon so that you can fly on instruments. And this was an artificial horizon is worked so that the normal position is in the same attitude, the same in relation to the actual aircraft with the horizon. If you drop the left wing, then the left wing on this little aircraft will drop in this dial. But for straight and level, what you're trying to do all the time is to either having set your sights on a point on the horizon, try to keep the aircraft heading in that same direction, or if you're flying by instruments or a mixture of the two, then you try to keep the aircraft, little aircraft, in the dial on the line drawn across, which is the medium, which represents the horizon. And of course, you'd be using, to do that, to keep it in position, you'd be using the four, the three surfaces, if you want to count the elevators on the tail as one of the items. The elevators on the ailerons, rather, ailerons at the end of the wing, to keep it level and going straight and level, which is known as straight and level flying.